go and look, leverage what you have, leverage your assets, then leverage your relationships, then leverage, maybe if you're a freelancer, you're a producer, you're a filmmaker, whatever it is, a marketer, how can you go to people and create money for them so they're excited to give it to you?
Reminiscing about the good old days and all that.
Hi, I'm Noah Kagan, chief sumo of AppSumo.com and Sumo Group. I'm also a teacher on YouTube. You can look me up on Noah Kagan, and you are watching Behind the Brand with Brian Elliott.
Hey, I'm Brian Elliott. Welcome to another edition of Behind the Brand. Noah, I usually ask my guests, how'd you get this job?
How'd I get this job? Well, the simple answer is I kept getting fired. So I couldn't get a job. And then eventually I had to make my own job. And somehow I'm still doing this career. I don't like the word job, but this career 10 years later.
Yeah, maybe we'll unpack that a little bit. Sure. But so for those who don't know you and your history, let's go back in the origin story a little bit.
Yeah.
Your early days. What did you want to be even before you started thinking about a career?
I wanted to be rich. I wanted to be rich, but I thought it just magically appears. I thought you get older, things happen, and there's just money in this bank account. And it didn't work out that way. But I was always really excited about business. And I grew up in Silicon Valley, like a few miles from Apple. And so I was always really excited about doing business and technology and some kind of intersection between those two. I wasn't really sure how it was going to play out, though.
What did your parents do?
So that was really interesting as well, because my biological father started his own copier business, which is now obsolete. Like, I don't know if people even use copiers or faxes, but he came to this country and really hustled his way into a pretty successful company selling copiers and faxes. And then my stepfather is a computer programmer. And so I kind of had the sales guy over here and then the engineer person over here to kind of put me in the middle.
Who raised you? Was it your...
It was my stepfather. My father has been an interesting, I think, motivator for me because he passed away, I think, a little early. And then he also lost all of his business. So a few years in, not a few years, but some years into his company, from drugs and drinking and a lot of bad choices that he made, he lost everything. And I think for a lot of my career, I wanted validation from him. Like, hey, I made it. Look, I did something that you weren't able to do, and I was able to get validation and be proud of me. I never really fully got that from him. So I think that did drive me in a way. And I was also afraid of making some of the mistakes that he made. Like, all this business stuff, I finally made millions of dollars. I'm going to lose it all. And that was a common fear I've had. Even till this day, I still think it's subconsciously there.
So thank you for sharing that. I mean, I love when we can get personal, we can talk about stuff that really matters, because I think I'm a student of human behavior. First of all, I'm trying to figure myself out.
Yeah.
It's like this ongoing process. Like, why do I behave the way that I do? Why do I make certain choices? Why do I have certain triggers? You know, what's going on in my head or my heart, that have caused me to make some of these really drastic decisions in my life too? Quitting a perfectly good job, you know, starting from scratch at arguably the worst time in the history of the world, you know, 2007 heading into 2008. So you knew you wanted to be rich, you wanted to have money. What was that a function of seeing your dad's choices and just maybe wanting more security, you think?
What I actually want, I think I was just always fascinated with like business.
Yeah.
I think what's an interesting kind of a way to test that for yourself is like when you open a newspaper, what was the first section that you read? And I think everyone chooses a section. Or the other thing is Barnes & Noble, which I guess is now gone. But when I went to Barnes & Noble as a kid, which was always really exciting, it was like, which magazine do you pick up? Mm-hmm. And I would always pick up two magazines. I'd pick up Tattoos and Business, like Ink, Red Herring, Fast Company, all those. Tattoo ones just because I think they're fascinating. The business stuff was just always really exciting about how it's changing the world and how we're creating all this technology. And I think I was just, and same with the newspaper, I was always reading the business section, technology section, and I was just so excited about how that was shaping the world, and I didn't know how it was going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I just knew that I was.
I think we're kind of cut from the same cloth that way. I'd call you like a lemonade stand kid. Like, you know, you want to have your own business, or you want to get started with either figuring stuff out, how the world works, a business works. Is that true?
Yeah, something I've reflected on really recently in this year is I think I have a need, I chase a lot. And so I lack a lot of fulfillment in some of my work, which is actually a successful thing. So like it leads me to keep doing new things. It leads me to create new things. But sometimes I'm so busy onto the next thing, I have no appreciation or value or fulfillment of what I've been able to do. And I think I've noticed that my mom, which is kind of wild. Like she's like, all right, we're doing this thing next. I got to clean this. I'm like, do you want to just sit with us and hang out? And I think that's led me to do these different things in business.
Yeah, that's super interesting too. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I just play one on TV, right? But I thought a lot about this myself. And, you know, I think this discussion is super healthy because I'm sure a lot of people who are watching are a lot like us, you know, trying to figure out, trying to figure stuff out. But, I mean, what I hear you saying is that you love the process more than the destination, maybe. Or perhaps, you know, you're not focused as much on the payoff or the destination as you are in just the chase, the chop, the process.
Yeah. I think I'm figuring, you know, there's a Steve Jobs quote. I think we quote everything to Steve Jobs. Like, but when you realize that everyone's a dumbass, then you realize that, like, you're not such a fuck up yourself. It's not so bad for yourself. But I think the idea is that when you realize not everyone is perfect, it kind of gives you freedom to be yourself. And so for me, I think a lot of what I have been focused on historically is the destination. I am focused on, like, how do I get $1 million? And I think that's a very big misconception for people in life where we're so fixated on, like, if I get this thing, if I get this money, everything else is solved. And only this year, as I've started taking my life back, I would say, and revisiting the Noah I really like and I enjoy, I've started just saying, all right, well, why don't I just enjoy some of the journey part and not just be so fixated on the destination? And I notice I do this in my word of the year is congruency. And I notice I do it in my personal life, in my work life, in my relationships. Like when I go biking, I'm only just like, how do I get to the end of the ride? Let me just get to the end.
Wait, so are you road biker or off-road biker? Because roadie is a totally, like, I have total judgment for you.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely judge. I love judge. So lately I've actually gone into the middle. So normally I'm a road biker, but I've been transitioning a little bit into a gravel biker. So that's a kind of a new sport, which is between the mountain and road.
Are you clipped in?
I do clip in.
Okay, so.
I wear spandex. That's when you know you're serious about biking.
That explains a lot. Okay, so actually, there's this whole thing, like, you can tell the kind of person, A, what kind of shoes they wear, B, what kind of car they drive. You can make certain assumptions and judgments that are probably really wrong, but
maybe not.
Accurate too.
I think the biking thing, the only thing I was trying to highlight there is that I think we all have different types of personalities, and part of it is it shouldn't be, I think one thing is just not being ashamed of our personality and just accepting and embracing. I think that's one thing I've been working on. It's like, this is how who you are. I think I've also just been noticing there's areas where with biking, let me just look around a little bit more and let me just try to appreciate the nature or the weather or just the sun or the uncomfortableness,
yeah,
discomfort that I'm feeling in it. And that's proved to be a little bit more richer of a life. And I think when people are searching for enlightenment or fulfillment, it's kind of like it's all there right now in this moment. But I think I'm so looking for that next hit that I just don't get it at all. So I've really taken a step back in almost everything I'm doing to be more observant about, like, don't worry about the destination. You're going to die. That's definitely for sure. So let's enjoy some of these journeys on that path.
So you said something that stuck out to me. You said this year you started to change that.
Yeah.
What is it about this year that changed? Was there a tipping point or something happened or you had a light bulb moment? What happened?
I answered the call. And we're all getting called. It's for you. I answered the call in two different things. I think what's been fascinating about the way that we think as people, or in my observation, we all know our answers. Like, I'm not a guru. I don't know all the, I do have advantages and expertise in business stuff. I don't think I'm that much smarter than anyone else. But I think there's a lot of the hard decisions that people aren't willing to make.
Such as?
Breaking up with someone, quitting a job that sucks, saying something to someone they want to say to, doing a hobby that they've been wanting to try, but they've been avoiding it, dealing with some of their kids' stuff about how they want their life to be in their kids' life, where they want to live, but they're not living. I mean, pretty much everything. And I think those hard decisions are the ones that people avoid, including myself for many years, and I still do it. But I think this year I answered some of those calls in my relationship, which is not anything as a criticism of my partner at the time, but it wasn't right. I just knew it. And so I spent 2 years to try to convince myself of that. And then when I finally experienced being alone, which I thought would be more scary for me, it wasn't as scary as I thought, which is kind of the thing. I've watched a lot of your episodes, and it's like, that is kind of the message. Like, the things we fear the most sometimes aren't that scary. And the same thing in business, where the phrase that I didn't like is that for the past 3 years of my company and what I've been doing professionally, I feel like I've just been calling it in. Like, oh, that's funny. It's all about calls, but it is. I was calling it in. Like, am I really showing up? Am I really present? Am I really fully engaged in the work I'm doing? And I would say no. And then when COVID hit in March, I had a few people tell me, like, hey, you know, some of the things you've done, like, have really helped me. I was like, nah, I don't think so. I didn't believe it.
Right.
And then a few more people told me, they're like, hey, you know, you did this video, or you have monthly 1K.com, your course, or something I bought on AppSumo, or some of your content you've put out. And honestly, I just was in disbelief. And at that moment, I started thinking, well, maybe I can't help these people.
Disbelief, why though?
It's funny. I was listening to my own episode. I think some people don't like hearing their own voices. I love hearing my own stuff lately. And I think that's the way you improve, by being an editor of yourself. And so I was listening to an episode, and I think this is going to sound, it sounds fucking crazy. I thought I was a dumbass. And I thought all these people then for listening to me are dumbasses. And there's no way if they're listening to me, they're going to be smart.
Yeah.
And so one of the realizations that was kind of a breakthrough for me was going back to some of my older content and looking at the comments. Like, we put out an NPR episode on YouTube where I hired an NPR producer to come do my show to see what a professional's like. I put out the video, moved on to the next thing. And then maybe a few months ago, I went and looked at the comments, and people were like, this is like the gold standard for how to do a podcast. And I finally just started really listening to the people and also just listening to myself. And I was like, maybe I'm not such a dumbass. And maybe these people are a lot smarter than I'm giving themselves credit for. And maybe what I'm actually saying does help. And I think what's crazy is this whole imposter syndrome. I think we need to figure out how to get rid of that word. Because if that word didn't exist, people would just be like, well, I'm just going to teach and see if it helps. And I don't think people would be second guessing so much whether it's actually helping. They'd just be focused on, here's a person, I'm going to do my best to help them. If it works, great. If it not, maybe I can figure out why it's not working.
Yeah. I think it's a really good point. I mean, it sounds like classic imposter syndrome stuff.
Yeah.
I struggle with it all the time. But at the same time, I think, you know, we all have gifts, right? One of my gifts is I can see talent and value in other people really easily, even if they don't think they have value. It's like, oh, you're amazing at this, that, and the other. Or, you know, I don't know. It just comes to me, and people are often surprised that I can zero in on what they're good at,
yeah.
Or maybe even mention something that they never thought about. And so, for that reason, the imposter syndrome stuff, it doesn't affect me too much, because in a way, I sort of see us, you know, very equal, like with just blessed with different talents and abilities, and you know, we're maybe if you know a little bit of my story. You know, nature versus nurture is a big, you know, debate with me. It's like, how much is nature? How much is nurture? And I think there's a fair argument that there's equal parts depending on, you know, how much you absorb and take forward. But, yeah, imposter syndrome is a roadblock for a lot of people, and it doesn't have to be.
Well, I guess the question then is like, how does everyone work on imposter syndrome? And like, one of the distinguishing moments, or not distinguishing, but like a interesting moment in my life, is I remember Tim Ferriss, who's now a global superstar, and my mom and brother my mom's a nurse and my brother's a doctor, went to traditional schools and followed a, I would say, a more traditional path. They're like, well, who is he? Why is he speaking? Why did he get to write a book? And that was, I mean, 2007, and that really stuck with me about, they thought that to live a life that you want to, you need permission.
Right.
That there's permission given. And I think when we start living without permission and without apologies and just really exploring the things that we're interested without shame. Shame is such a crazy one too.
Yeah.
It starts like kind of opening up the imposter syndrome, kind of like, is this really true? And what am I really an imposter about? Like, I have an imposter syndrome. I don't actually think if I have an imposter syndrome, but I have doubt. Can I really help people with their business?
Yeah. Right.
And so maybe people have doubt. Am I a great filmmaker? Am I a great writer? Am I a great mother? Am I a great cook? Whatever it is. For me, if I have that doubt, there's actually a really simple thing that I do. I just go and see if I can help one person.
And if I can point out something.
Point, yeah, go wild, man.
As a super strong point, I think you're a fantastic teacher.
Thank you.
I really do. And I think what makes you a great teacher is that humility, maybe some of that doubt. It makes approaching you or listening, even if I'm watching on YouTube, very disarming. The opposite of that is, you know, when people are fronting, right? It's like, I know everything and I deserve to be here because Forbes wrote about me and then Inc. wrote about me. You know, it's like, it's that. So I used to work at Universal Pictures, and at the time we distributed DreamWorks and all different kinds of great, you know, Academy Award winning titles. And it was a big marketing tactic to have accolades. That was a big part of, you know, social proof. It's like, it would not just be like, this movie. It's the Academy Award winning movie, right? And then we'd put the five stars.
Yeah, it's like Ohio Film Festival and
all that stuff in there, right? Which, you know, is valid if you've won it. That's great. But what I see, the value that I see in you as a teacher is it's basically just stripped down. It's just like, this is me. I'm trying my best. I'm not purporting to be an expert. But at the same time, that humility gives you a ton of credibility. It's like, oh, now I just trust you even more because you've told me that you don't think that you're better than me, right? So it's very approachable. I love the vulnerability aspect. And I think that you're a tinkerer. You're an experimentor. You're a piece of advice that Seth Godin gave me that really stuck with me is he told me something very controversial. You ready for this? He said, I don't know if you're a Star Wars fan, but I'm a Star Wars fan. He said, Yoda was wrong. You know, when he said, do or do not, there is no try. Yoda was completely wrong. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? He says, there has to be a try, right? Because if you're not trying, you're either lying or you're hiding. And the people who, you know, fail the most ultimately win. Because built into that idea is that we keep trying and failing until we figure it out. The people who really fail are people who never try. Like they just stay small, or they stay quiet, or they stay hidden. Or they fail too far, they can never recover. It's like the person who jumps out of the airplane, oops, I forgot my parachute. You know, you only got one shot. And you can't recover from that. Otherwise, everything else is just trying.
Yeah.
And so I see you as, you know, like fighting that good fight. And it covers a broad spectrum from making tacos or coconut wine from Vietnam or, you know, figuring out your app sumo business or growth hacking. I mean, it's, you know, it's an impressive body of work.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone's figuring it out. I think what's interesting about the imposter syndrome and figuring out and maybe my relatability, this is like a few different things. Number one, I think what's interesting about imposter syndrome is like, where are the certificates? Like, where do you get the certificate that you could be a cameraman? Like, maybe you go to USC school, but some of the best engineers I've ever worked with never went to college.
It depends, right? It's the answer from just about everything. It depends.
It depends. I think it's more of an internal question, though, that I'm wondering, where how does someone feel good about themselves where they're not even asking that question? Because lately, I haven't really even considered it. I just said, like, when I put out a video now, I really think about almost one thing. We call our tribe the underdogs. And I'm like, does this video actually help them? And do I believe it does?
Yeah.
And if it does to the best of my ability, that's the best I can do.
Yeah. I relate with that. My favorite movie is Rudy. I fancy myself an underdog as well. But so the other side of that is, so my sister's a nurse at Stanford Hospital. And we're all really glad that she went to school and got a license, right? And that someone gave her permission to be a nurse practitioner, right? And the same goes for the pilot or the people that make pacemakers or whatever. That's kind of critical, right? But for everything else that doesn't require that licensing, right? So CPAs, we're happy. Lawyers, we're happy. Doctors, that kind of profession. But there's other things that fall in this area. You know, like I think Elon Musk was quoted recently. He's like, I don't want college graduates. I just want people who, you know how to get stuff done, solve interesting problems.
Yeah, that's a lot of sense.
And so I think that's going away, right? The need for that kind of validation. But it depends. You know, education is great. You don't necessarily have to have someone grant you a certificate to prove that you can move on to the next level.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Facebook for a second. So was that your first job out of college?
Second job. Yeah, I think I was very naive about life. In college and out of college, those years, 21, 22.
Give us context what year this was.
It's 2005. So there's about 30 people at Facebook. It was really small.
And you were employee number?
30.
30. Okay.
Yeah. And so, yeah, set my resume. And I think the thing that convinced them, and this is something for anyone applying for any job out there, is that everyone is so lazy. Everyone is unbelievably lazy. Like if you're able to make it this far in the video, you're probably in the top 1% of population. Because they're like, I can't watch a 6-minute video. And I'm like, well, that's why you're not getting what you want. So when I applied to Facebook, and if you're applying for any job, I would copy this formula, is that make it undeniable for them to want to talk to you and undeniable for them to want to hire you. And I can give you some examples of that. But for me, when I applied for that job, I was already building all these websites. So I brought in printouts of all the websites I built, and I mocked up some Facebook things. So I was like, hey, here's how you guys are doing this, but I think you can do Facebook maps and things that they actually ended up doing later. So when I went to the interview, I showed them all the things that I was going to do for them.
Yeah.
So they were like, of course we want you to come do these things here.
Yeah. You're employee number 30. You've told the story, but my audience maybe hasn't heard the whole thing, or they have ADD and they can't get through a 6-minute video. What happened?
Well, I did get fired. So for the people that haven't heard the story, I got 0.1% of the company when I joined. I was there around 9 months, and then I got fired. Let go is like the nice term for people who get fired.
It's like furloughed.
Furloughed. Yeah, that's the new, you got dumped.
Downsized.
We both separated. No, you got dumped. Now that I've started my own company, and I think I've stepped into my own greatness, my own definition of my own greatness, I think I had a lot of insecurities, and I think it was totally right for them to fire me. I think what one of the major things, especially if I've gotten older, is that we all like to work on our weaknesses. We're like, oh, I suck at this. Let me focus on that. It's like, why don't you focus on the winners? It's like when one person rejects, it's like one negative comment we all focus on instead of like the 99 positive. I think on the flip side of that, for them as a business owner, you have to find people. This is more technical, but you have to find people that scale with the business better. And I wasn't ready to do that. I think I wanted it to be the Noah Kagan show. And at the end of the day, that is the Mark Zuckerberg show. And it was very clear about that. I'd say that the opposite side of that experience, what was the most amazing about all of it, the biggest takeaways for me is not necessarily the firing, because I think it was right and I had to mature and I had to go do my own journey, but it was the learnings I got from being there. Being in a group, like people say this, oh, you're the average of five people. I hate that phrase because everyone knows, I hate phrases that everyone knows, but no one does shit about. But being at Facebook, I was literally the dumbest person there almost every day. And that, the thing is, it doesn't feel good because people are like, be around great people. But if you're around people better than you, it doesn't feel good because you're pretty constantly intimidated that like how much better Mark and Aaron and Sean Parker and Dustin Moskovitz, Chris Hughes, I know Chris wasn't there at the time, but these people are exceptional. And on the contrary of that, I will say is like, you should do whatever it takes to be around those kind of people, whatever it takes. If you can see, and I think what people miss out on a lot of times is they actually see this. And one thing I don't even realize I do this act. I still do this to this day. If I ever see amazingness, like more technical business, lately it's been a little bit more in the film production side, I'll do whatever it takes to like try to connect with that person and just be like, hey, I just want to be around you. I don't know what's going to happen. And so that was a really powerful lesson from being around Facebook. I think Mark's vision, having like a great vision, even not even in business, but in life, like Mark from being 20, he was 24 years old, same age as me, was like, we're going to take over the world. And he was 100% had 100% conviction about that.
Yeah.
Where he was like, we are going to connect every single person in this universe. That's a big ass, vision and belief from someone 24. And I've worked at Microsoft. I met Bill Gates. I've worked at, mint.com, and I've started my own companies over there since then. That still sticks with me. Like how big he was believing it was supposed to be. And he had an offer, and I don't know if the story's, it's not super public, but he had an offer to get a $1 billion sellout at 24 years old. Imagine getting $1 billion at 24. People now today are like, no, if someone offered you $50 million, would you accept it? I'm like, actually, $50 million sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
But he had $1 billion, and he was like, nah, I think we can do more. And it wasn't about the money. He just believed in what we were doing. Yeah. So there's that as a lesson. He was singularly focused.
There's a few different people that watch the show. There are people that I think I would call level uppers who are trying
to
constantly level up what they're doing. And it doesn't matter what age they are. They're just constantly trying to improve what they're doing.
I think the two things I would figure out for your passion, and everyone always says this one, find the things you don't like to do. I'm like, I know a lot of things I don't like to do. I think one thing you said that triggered something for me is what has been something that you've thought you couldn't do? I think the other thing about passion is just look at where you're spending your free time. Look at what you're doing for free. Like, what is my natural inclination? So, like, we have a piano up here in the house. And I'm like, I really want to learn piano. I really want to learn piano. And I have to force myself to play piano. And I hate it. But you know what I'm going to play all day long? Chess. I can literally play chess all day long, every day. No one has to ask me to do it. Same with biking. Same with marketing. Like, this business stuff that I'm doing, like the YouTube, I don't get paid.
Yeah.
We make $3,000 a month from it.
Yeah.
Which sounds good, except you realize that I'm spending $30,000 to make three. So, that, by the way, if you can't do math, that's not good.
But it lights you up.
It's very fulfilling. And there's days where it sucks. And that's something to another thing to explore is that also just maybe notice, this is something I've been really figuring out with following passion. Notice my impulses. the problem that people have with trying to make money out of a hobby, which is a great thing, I think it's great, is that they don't make millions right away. And so that part's the discouraging part. Yeah. They're not rich overnight.
But I think as I reflect back on what I've done, it's kind of like it's a muscle or it's a callus. You know, like if you've ever done pull-ups or push-ups, you know, pull-ups are really hard at first because you have no, first of all, hand strength or anything. But once you get those calluses going, you know, it becomes easier and easier because it can hold your strength. And I was forced to get the calluses because I cut the cord at a really bad time and I had to sink or swim. And so I got better and better at being uncomfortable. And then it just became like, oh yeah, I know what this feels like. I'm not afraid anymore. In fact, it reminds me of, we're here by the ocean in Malibu talking to Laird Hamilton. And what I learned from Laird, Laird's a big wave surfer. I said, Laird, how could you go out in 40, 50, 60, 80 foot waves? He's like, oh, I mean, I've nearly drowned over 1,000 times. And so at some point you sort of understand that it's going to be okay. At first, you know, you suck in a lot of water, you almost die. It's terrible, but you get better and better at being beat up by the ocean. And then he said something amazing. He said, and you have to learn to surrender at the right time and then find your time to pop up out of the water. He said, so when the waves are crushing you and, you know, if you fight the waves and you try to get up too early, you're going to just get pounded, beat back down. He goes, you have to learn to surrender to the ocean and wait, bide your time. And then when it's passed, then you pop up and you get your air. And I was like, that is the most beautiful metaphor. Because I felt panic before. It's like, uh-oh, I'm bleeding out. Bad things are happening with my business and the economy is terrible and blah, 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 you know, all these excuses. And I just thought, all right, pause, surrender to it. It's happening. Wait, and then pop up. And it's been super good advice.
I mean, we were just sitting back, you know, chopping it up, reminiscing about the good old days and all that, you know, tracking my roots, where I came from and where I'm going.